good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. I know we're on the tail end of the annual meeting, so I appreciate you guys coming out and attending the talk today. So I'll start off today with the obligatory presenter disclosures. So I have to state that the following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to the presentation existed during the past 12 months. So I'm currently employed by Prometheus Research LLC, and I have a stock in Prometheus as well. So let me kind of go back to this. So my name's Charles Terrell. I am the Director of Product Management at Prometheus Research. I actually started there as an analyst about 7 years ago and have worked my way up into more of the software development side of things. Prometheus Research, we perform data management services for folks in human subjects research, everything from small clinical laboratories to medium centers to large multi-site data collection initiatives through grant funding sources and things of that nature. So we started about 12 years over in New Haven, Connecticut, working out of labs in Yale, and then we've expanded out into other universities. During this process, we found that a lot of the off-the-shelf tools that were being developed didn't fit a lot of the needs for the researchers that we were working with. So we decided to start our own development group and actually develop some of our own tools, first starting with a system that we called RED for the Research Exchange Database, which we eventually renamed RexDB because, well, we got a cool little dinosaur logo with them. So, but essentially, we started this initiative with open source developers. We committed ourselves to open sourcing our software as we went along, both at the very core fundamental software level as well as a lot of the implementations that we built using that. So what I'm going to talk about today is a specific use case in the process of open sourcing our RexDB stack with a research project that we did with Autism Speaks, which is a advocacy group in autism research and their data collection efforts. So just as an overview, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the central limitations of existing electronic data capture systems. We'll have a brief overview of what RexDB is and how we've implemented it. Then we'll go through a case study of transitioning to an open source platform from their original proprietary system that they had implemented. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about the benefits of transitioning to an open source platform, and this is actually going to jump off of your talk quite well because we're one of those tens of thousands of options. So let's talk a little bit about the limitations of existing EDC systems. EDC systems, electronic data capture systems for data entry by either patients or by clinical staff members, there's a huge number of them. A lot of them have some critical failings, the primary of which we'll focus on today is about integration with a larger research data initiative. But first and foremost, there's always the question of security. Because we're working human subjects research, there's always the question of, is this a secure application? Does it meet the regulations dictated by HIPAA? As well as, are the user interfaces friendly enough for people to be able to use off the shelf? So those are two, you know, you have to weigh those balances between security as well as features and functionality for the users that are configuring the systems. So if you're using something, you know, a software as a service that's right off the shelf that's really made for survey design and you're using it to collect protected health information and you don't have a business associates agreement with them, there can be difficulties there. So that's why you may want to look at something that you can spool up on your own and that you have direct control of both the servers as well as the software. The studies that we've worked with in the past really are very complex and dynamic. It isn't just a simple, you know, straightforward set of requirements that have to be done at one time. We're dealing with longitudinal studies. We're dealing with studies where there's different protocols based upon different criteria. We're dealing with multiple different types of clinical instruments that can fulfill certain sorts of requirements that are being proposed for the study. There needs to be an efficient reuse of the research instruments, and this really kind of comes into the integration portion, which is the primary limitation of most electronic data capture systems that are out there. A lot of the studies that we've encountered in the past are kind of publish and forget models. They collect the information, they perform their analyses on it, they publish their paper, they present their findings, and then it goes onto a thumb drive, it goes onto a laptop, and it goes into someone's closet. It's just not a realistic model. That information needs to have a much longer lifespan. The cost of collecting that information is so prohibitive at this point that you need to make sure that it has a lifespan that will cover multiple studies and that you can reuse that from time and time again. This is going to be across studies, across data types, across different clinical instruments. So there's an inherent complexity there, but at the same time, there's a very, very definitive need for reusability. The way you should do this is obviously to integrate all of the information into one centralized data source where you can pull in your information from multiple studies. So you can, if you have a research participant that's participating in multiple studies, you can collectively see all of the information from each one of them, even though it might be in a lab down the hall. This does add additional complexity in terms of permissions and restriction of the data from one user to another, but that's something that needs to be addressed. And then finally, instrument versioning is a big issue because as time goes by, each instrument is going to have some migration in terms of the version. You may add a new section. You may alter a question type. You may do corrections to the way that you asked specific questions. If you're just using kind of flat tables to collect that information and you're not tracking those versions, you're going to start seeing differences in your data as time goes on from one collection point to another. And unless you're tracking that and managing that, you can have some severe problems in your analyses. So the solution that we came up with is RexDB. You can all check out the project at rexdb.org, which I'll talk again about later on. But it's an open source project, and we'll talk a little bit about what license we have it under. But we consider it an integrated data management platform for collecting, integrating, curating, and exploring human biomedical and translational research data. Particularly focused on human subjects, both clinical instruments as well as biospecimen collection, study management, and collection of other information from instrumentation. We've divided this software package into four different modules: Rex Platform, Rex Acquire, Rex Integrate, and Rex Explore. The reason for this is because you might actually only want to use the Rex Platform part of our software, which is a way of working with a lot of other open source technologies specifically designed for researchers. So we use Postgres as our database engine. We use Python as our application development language, as well as we implement our solutions on Linux for the operating system. But Rex Platform has a series of tools in it that allows you to directly communicate with a Postgres database through a thin data access layer that we called HTSQL, which is a lot easier to learn than SQL. It's a direct web gateway into the database, not a GUI one. It's actually a URL-based web gateway into your data, and actually allows for much more rapid application development, and allows the primary benefit of it is allows non-technical users, so what we call accidental programmers, which I consider myself an accidental programmer. I just kind of fumble into code rather than actually learn the best practices of it. But our accidental programmers, our analysts, our researchers, our scientists, they can grok the logic, but SQL has a lot of other complexity in it. This allows them to directly access their data in a much more easy way. Rex Platform also has a lot of other tools to handle standard data management challenges, such as extract, transform, load processes, a lot of screen design and development improvements, and things of that nature. Rex Acquire is our primary replacement for the electronic data capture portion of the system. So this comes in kind of two flavors, one we call Rex Survey and the other one we call Rex Entry. Rex Survey is for direct data entry by clinical patients. So this is you know, the patients are at home. They can web into a, they can log into a web portal and enter data about themselves and their children right then and there. The RECS entry portion of it is for clinical staff members and actually has a dual data entry component for improved accuracy for data entry through a validation method. So two people do data entry, you compare the results, and I believe the latest statistics are brings the accuracy from about a 96% to about a 99.8% accuracy rate from paper entered forms. RECS Integrate is that centralized system which has all the study management components. It stores the output that's coming from RECS Acquire. It also stores the sample information and all those other items. And then RECS Explore has a series of basic analyses tools and allows you to then drop your results into R, SAS, SPSS, or any of your favorite kind of analysis tools, but allows you to create data sets and also share those data sets with people that can log into your system. So let's talk a little bit about the case study that led us to this platform. So we worked with Autism Speaks. Autism Speaks is based out of Southern California, but you've probably seen the puzzle piece all over the place. So they are one of the larger communities that focuses on autism advocacy, as well as they do their own research as well. So they asked us to replace two of their systems. One was their OSCAR system, which is their online system for clinical research, which is their web-based EDC, as well as their system for AGREE recruitment and handling, where AGREE is their autism genetic research exchange. And this is their SARA system. These were completely separate systems. They were doing data collection in one, and then they were tracking their subjects as well as the subjects' blood draws and genetic components in another one. They had the same sets of subjects, but they were two completely separate systems. So the big problem there was about integrating these together, so the data that the phenotypic data they were collecting through OSCAR was integrating with the genetic data that they were keeping in SARA. So we had previously developed a code base that we were working with a lot of our clients. At this point, our software was proprietary. And we wanted to break out of that, and we wanted to use this kind of as the flagship project to move our software into the open source realm. So we needed to evaluate and replace a lot of pieces of the components that we had. So we re-architected the system from the ground up, essentially rewriting every single bit of code, because a lot of what we were doing was about 6 years old at that point, and there was a lot of new open source technologies that we can jump off of when we tried to essentially roll our own 6 years ago. So this included HCSQL, it included the development of RECS Acquire, which was for the self-administered data entry, RECS Proto, which was a rapid screen development platform. So this way, non-web developers could actually make augmentations to our data collection screens, both for form data entry and for general study management. And then there was also a new core study data model that we put in place that managed individuals, studies, protocols, biospecimens, so on and so forth. And again, this entire new code base was developed in Python with a Postgres backend, so it's all jumping off of standard open source tools. The open source license that we ended up obtaining and going with is known as the AGPL version 3. Essentially, this allows you to freely download, freely install, freely augment the software, as well as freely distribute it after that. The only thing, the only restriction that we place on it is in the places where we have essentially our about pages that reference our initiative, those do have to be retained and they can't be removed from the code base. So this way, at least the attribution for the project is intact. So that's pretty much the only restriction that's given on the AGPL version 3. And we did a lot of talking about, did we want to adopt the MIT standard or the BSD standard? And, you know, those conversations go round and round and round. We're in the process of open sourcing the code at the moment. So essentially, the code for the RECS platform for HTSQL, that has all been open sourced. Through this evaluation process with Autism Speaks and developing their platform, we've kind of gone back and re-architected a lot of our components. So we're rolling a lot of these pieces out, but we want to make sure security reviews are done properly and that, you know, this is a little bit more bulletproof before we open it up to the community, because we want to make sure that we're delivering a baseline that's really, really good for people then to jump off of. But as we open source our repositories, and you can go to bitbucket.org/Prometheus, and that has, I believe at this point we've open sourced about 12 of our repositories within the Rex platform itself, that you can use, and HeSQL works with Postgres and a lot of other database engines, for instance. But you can go in there, you can comment on it, you can make changes, you can put in pull requests. We actively are looking to expand that community and get people to start using the software and tell us what they like and tell us what they don't like, and we want people to actively engage in that. Through the website rexdb.org, we'll be announcing further repositories that we're opening up in terms of Rex Acquire and Rex Integrate and Rex Explore. Our target is by mid next year to have all of the platform to be open sourced and available to be freely used. Then came converting existing data. So this is always the problem. When you shift platforms, you have to move over an extensive amount of information. So we were not only dealing with the individual records, we were dealing with all of their previous instances of data entry of form information, as well as the configuration for those forms. Because we were shifting to, you know, we were trying to pull information out of their proprietary system, it was a little bit like pulling teeth. You had to go to their old vendor, you had to request the information, you had to make agreements in terms of what data that they actually retained that they still had right to and what we had to recreate from scratch. So, again, it's a big reason not to go with a proprietary system, because when it's locked up in there, you may have difficulties getting your information out, and that's not always a fun thing. And then we're consistently reevaluating our own platform. So once we were finished delivering the new integrated Oscar and Sarah systems for Autism Speaks, we've been working with them to give us feedback. We've been working with other clients as well on the same platform, and we've been integrating a lot of those changes. We consistently kind of update, again, this website with a lot of blog posts about design decisions, the challenges that we're facing, and then you'll also see that in the commits and in the documentation that we have in all of the various repositories on Bitbucket. So, you know, we've touched on a lot of the benefits for transitioning to an integrated open source platform. So kind of in summary, obviously the software is evaluated by a broader community where you can get much more feedback, you can get much more engagement, you can invite them to actively participate and commit code to your work. It allows, our solution allowed for a direct integration with a central data repository that's absolutely critical going forward within our research communities. There's a focus there on data reusability. So again, by architecting an open source platform that allows you to directly access the information through a series of query tools, and it's not locked up in a proprietary system, the data is automatically reusable. Extension or interoperability is immensely important because, quite honestly, if we don't build something that the exact thing that you want, you could always extend off of it. That also comes with the dangers that it can get a little stale. but the code base is freely open, so you're more than willing and able to write additional code to meet your needs, you can go ahead and do that. And the data is never locked into a single platform or format. That's probably the most important thing. Your data is too important to keep it locked up and at someone else's mercy. So, if you'd like more information, there's the Bitbucket link. Our project updates are on rexdb.org, or you can directly email me. I also left a couple of these little handouts that kind of explain the RexDB project on the back table. And that's it.
I think so, yeah. We don't have a moderator, so fortunately. Does anyone have questions for any of us? Yes?
Two things that you could elaborate on. Maybe it's not part of your evaluation, but one is the use of medical and laboratory standard terminology so that data can be transferred to the business system. The other one, you talked about the medical records between professionals, but how about actual citations and methods of translating so that you can understand?
For access to let me take the last one first. So the access by patients to their medical records. You know, that's one of the areas in the health IT world that's still, I don't think the value proposition has been properly thought through. All EMR vendors have a patient portal, practically all of them. In fact, they have to have one for meaningful use. And the conversation has always been, I guess on the provider side, there's concern about giving patients access to their records. It's definitely that straight out concern about what information they need to put on there. But you know, from the patient side, I'm saying, well, it's my medical record. I should be able to see it. In fact, I had to get my medical record last week for moving from one provider to another, and the lady said, well. You fill in this form, fill in this paper form, and we will request that, and we will bring in a service, and they will extract that record for you. And I said, no, I don't need a paper copy, I just need an electronic copy. But I couldn't get it, and they didn't have a patient portal that I could actually log on to get, and then they actually wanted to charge me for it, because it's like, okay, if you've read HIPAA, you know that you can't actually do that. I mean, you can charge me for the paper, but I don't want you to post it to me, I'll go and collect it. But where we went with the patient portal, because that did come up as one of the early ideas, and we took it in two directions. One, we developed a site that actually allows for a patient to consent to have their information shared, so they don't actually have to go into the clinics to consent for that information to actually share. So in the notification thing I showed you, a patient has to consent for that to happen. So if we're not going to send their doctor a notification about that, they've actually consented. But so that's really the first thing, the first foray into patient portal. That's actually the architecture behind that actually can support a patient portal. That's one direction we went. The other part on that, we actually developed a clinical intervention around mobile health, and it was a 14-week program that you essentially enrolled. And you could actually get text messages that, you know, gathered some basic information on weight and height and demographics, and then actually sent questions to patients to help them better manage their diabetes or whatever they are, or if you wanted to set a weight goal, whatever it was that actually followed them through. So those were the kind of two forays, but we really, the value proposition isn't there right now. I don't see it. And I guess the community doesn't see it, and they were a little shy of trying to get into that just because of the experience with EMRs. They all, as I said, they all have EMRs. They all have, all EMRs have customer portals, but they have huge problems getting folks actually sign up for it and actually use it. So I'm not sure if that answered the question. It's kind of back and forth. But then your other question was around medical. Semantic interoperability. So the product that we use is actually Mercifor. They're based out of Burbank, California, and they actually, surprisingly, I wasn't aware of them before this program, but surprisingly, the integration and data aggregation engine that they use, most HIEs use a flavor of it. So that's a good example of somebody downloading an open source tool and customizing it to what they wanted to actually do. So they, the semantic interoperability is really quite strong in their product. Mirth. Mirth. M-I-R-T-H.
We've seen similar issues, and we looked at Mirth as well on something we're actually going to be integrating. We have an asynchronous telemedicine platform we've built for doing consults in Rwanda and Haiti and Mexico. Some of the physicians here will, you know, will comment on cases. And one of the challenges we have there is in Haiti, French and Creole or Hadra, but this is actually a literal language issue. But they're talking about the same things. We have these fields, you know, as they fill out the consult form. We need to standardize, and so absolutely that's something that we look at as well, because you know, all the fields match up, but they need to have essentially an interaction layer between the you know the terms and how they're presented.
Yeah, and the other thing I guess add to that a little bit. One of the things we did was we used what's called the CC83, which is the latest iteration of the continuity of care document that was actually developed through the Office of the National Coordinator as well. And we actually insisted that all of the vendors adhere to that standard in extracting information out of their systems. And that was challenging for some of them. And some of them, they have challenges because they, traditional EMRs were built with a practice management side and a clinical management side, which makes no sense that you have two systems for the same business that you try to track patients through. So it literally means you're entering them in here and then you're sending a bunch of information to this other system. So they really had trouble finding, so if we wanted to pull some demographic information out of that system, they had a lot of challenges with that, but they might have been able to get other elements. But we made them adhere to that CCD. So essentially some of the vendors can do more data fields within that CCD document than others, but they all adhere to one standard.
Yes, go ahead.
How did your electronic your medical record situation evolve? Because I've heard that case of a situation where they charge you and a very large amount because they charge you the process of making copies too. So did you ever get an electronic copy?
Did I get my electronic copy? No. That's why I'm moving providers.
Yeah. Well, what if you had a friend, spouse, or something who was a physician?
I think I actually know. Well, it's two parts. I actually know we've worked with this medical group, and I actually know the capabilities of that EMR system. So I know they can't actually do that right now. They should be able to. And actually, there's another standard called the Direct Protocol, which is essentially a secure email protocol, and that's how. Again, it was developed by the ONC, and that's a standard that all EMR providers or EMR vendors are now starting to adhere to. And it was actually the reason we didn't get into specialty referrals until now, until the start of this year, because we would have had to build something that was custom, and there's no point. It's going to be
a direct protocol.
Yeah.
Thank you. To follow up with that, I think one of the big challenges that we've seen is that. With the depth, essentially, of personal health records, there's no, the standards, so there's no place where you can, when you receive that, data, there's no place to store it, right? I mean, you essentially had the single login, but you were then responsible for shepherding that to your next, provider, making sure that actually makes its way over there. And again, I think this goes back to your point about there's no business case there. Microsoft and Google both struggled to actually make a business case for a personal health record. Until a small group of people who are now wearing Fitbits, who don't really care about personal tracking, other than that, it really didn't. There wasn't the motivation. I know I personally am still waiting for a request I made 3 years ago from my physicians. I had to call 10 different physicians to try to collect it. There's no easy way to extract your records. I have to remember every place I went. I don't know.
So was Google's barrier? I thought Google's barrier was the regulatory environment.
I think it's both. I think they will tell you that it's a regulation because they want less regulation. I think that's probably part of it. But I know we've had a chance to, people in our group have had a chance to talk to their product manager, and it definitely died out just because they couldn't convince customers it was something that it was a good idea.
So if you tied it to financial reward, I don't think that
would be. It might, yeah. I think. I'm gonna bash Google for a second. I think Google also had a problem. Google struggles to develop products that are customer facing that last, other than we did AdWords and Gmail and a few others, but they don't really do a great job of rolling out products. So I think that's the other thing is they did an experiment, they were trying it, and it hit some barriers, and like, well, we're off in a new direction.
And there's a trust factor there as well. So one of the strength that we brought to the table. So we're a public health institute, and we're kind of a convener of community resources for programs, and we've done that for forever. So you're housing your data with somebody you trust, and that's a big part of it. And the second thing is, it's a heck of a lot of work to build the connectivity that we did in the last 18 months. It's just a crazy amount of work. And it's not easy, and most folks don't get there. We just happen to be fortunate, I think, that we managed to do that. So even if Google had a product, they're going to have large health systems that are willing to send them the information, share the information, and then if they'll look at all those sorts of things like the consent, all that sort of thing. It gets complicated pretty fast.
Also, with a lot of the recent changes to HIPAA with high tech, for instance, they assume a lot of risk in starting to manage that data. I mean, it was only recently, for instance, that they allowed their AWS systems to for you to sign a business associates agreement with them. So you can just host your own server, let alone them having direct access to these electronic medical health records. So, I mean, there's just a lot of assumed risk, and the benefit just doesn't outweigh it.
Could you come back and talk about that interoperability? What is it? How does it work?
The interoperability piece? In what in particular?
You said that ONC had developed something that your system ought
to use. The C83, the continuity of care document. So it's a standard, what's called HL7, Health Level 7 is the framework for clinical documentation. And the standard for sharing of clinical documentation. And the latest iteration of that was developed through the ONC is called C83. And it's consolidated CCD, essentially. That's what it is. If you Google that, you'll find it.
Thanks.
Sure.
I was curious about the data center that you guys put together in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. For instance, like a researcher might be able to one day use that information that is automatically de-identified, and like how you see that data being able to be used in the future other than by practitioners.
Right. So, firstly, it's not in Louisiana; it's in Colorado for a very good reason, and it's co-located in California. But we access it in Louisiana. So. That's a very good question, and actually we have we finished about 2 months ago putting together a patient-centered outcome research grant application, and we're actually partnering with a research institute at LSU and with the public health department at Tulane University to do just that. And it's kind of a cool concept because we have this network that's actually tracking population tracking, I don't want to use that word, it's probably bad in current environments. But you know what I mean, it's actually a living network, so it's not, when you think of traditional research and you have your control groups and your specific study groups, you study them for a time period, and here we have actually a live network that's actually going to be able to use that. So that's going to be the first opportunity we're excited about.
Great.
And there, we're essentially going to be spend the first 8 months building the network, so building the connectivity between sites, and we'll be building some data warehouses for data cubes for sharing information between the different entities.
How do you attempt to de-identify people? I mean, some medical records have narratives written by doctors.
Mm-hmm. So, it depends on who you're sharing the information with, if you need to de-identify it or not. Notes are a problem. Free text is a big problem. We actually put the beginnings of some NLP into the solution, and we natural language processing, so we actually have some algorithms that run to actually look for certain keywords and look for certain contexts, and we actually filter out the records on that basis so that they don't get shared. We have the sensitive data framework takes care of some of that, so it actually filters a lot out on cases of ICD-9 codes and CPT codes. Exact matching is easy enough to do, like direct words, like specific words. Then we have the additional algorithms, and we also but that's how we're managing it right now. So if we're going to share information with a particular group, we have to think about, you know, if it's an insurer that certain information that can't go, and we have to make sure before it goes. We take the risk that, you know, it's not going to have the wrong information in there. And there are certain information that they can see, like an insurer can come in and do chart pulls in a clinic for the patients that they are in their plan. So they can actually come in once or twice a year and do that anyway. So one of the conversations we're having right now is with one of the larger Blue Cross Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they want to do that. They want to actually see the patient population. Of course, they want to see more than we're willing to give them right now, but it's a saving resource for them, so they don't have to send people out to the clinics to actually do the chart pulls. So that's a complicated question to answer, but it's a work in progress.
I think we have time for one more question. All right. Thank you.